each trip, the way it's written now, one has to examine the state interest as compared to the personal interest that may be involved.
Governor Palin agrees to reimburse the state for some family travel. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 24th of February. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Keegan Randall makes history again with a silver medal.
She is, you know, second on the podium at World Championships. This is a very historic day.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. It's never too early to set expectations and goals for your child's education. The UA College Savings Plan provides opportunities that can help you reach your educational savings goals. Save in Alaska, study anywhere. There's more information available by calling 1-888-4 and then Alaska. This message sponsored by the UA College Savings Plan.
Governor Sarah Palin will reimburse the state for costs associated with 9 trips taken by her children. The governor's office says it will amount to about $7,000. Palin must pay the state within 120 days, according to a settlement agreement that was the result of an ethics complaint filed against her with the Alaska Personnel Board. The board hired Special Investigator Tim Petuminos to look into the matter. He says the question was whether the family travel was warranted under the State Ethics Act.
And then there are regulations that attempt to decide or describe what warranted means under the circumstances. And so my endeavor was to take a look at all of these trips that were the subject of the complaint and do two things. One, see if we could come to an agreement about what was and what was not appropriate. But more importantly, to try to put together a mechanism that would be clear and would keep these complaints from being filed in the future.
What percentage of the trips were questionable?
Well, I looked at over 40, and at the end of the day, I think there were 8 or 9 that we say are questionable, where the governor agreed not to contest reimbursement. She may feel that they were still proper, but rather than contest it, we reached an agreement, and we reached an agreement to seek clarifying regulations so that the decision makers have a better understanding of how to apply the act and the regulations provide now.
Can you give us an example of one of the trips in question?
Sure. One of the trips in question was a governor's conference on the East Coast, which was largely an adult policymaking issue. And there's no question that there was a state interest being served. But then the question becomes, was there a state interest being served by the attendance of the children? And a lot of emphasis had been placed on invitations, but my concern about the invitations was that the party making the invitation doesn't pay the bill. And so while being invited is relevant and needs to be taken into consideration, it's not the final answer. So in each trip, the way it's written now, one has to examine the state interest as compared to the personal interest that may be involved and balance them and determine whether the trip was primarily for a personal interest or a state interest.
You were quoted as saying the state's rules on family travel are dizzying. What did you mean by that?
They tend to be internally inconsistent, and it requires actually looking into the mind of the person making the trip on a trip-by-trip basis. And I just found that very difficult, and I found it difficult for the decision makers who are looking for a bright line test to determine whether a trip is reimbursable or not. I think we could do better.
Do you have an idea of what type of language might clarify this?
Well, I think that if they put into effect regulations that talk about, you know, what factors to consider, that the amount of the expenditure is relevant. I think it needs to be tied to the amount of the expenditure. It needs to be tied to what the purpose is. And at the end of the day, assuming that there is a general state purpose, education, and it might involve children, or one of the examples was every year the administration does a first family photograph. And I don't think anyone should expect the governor to pay out of her personal funds attendance at the first official family photograph. But there are ways that these regulations could be written to provide better guideposts than what we have now, which is, let's examine the state of mind of the decision maker on a trip-by-trip basis.
Tim Patumanos was hired as a special investigator for the Alaska Personnel Board. In a statement today, Governor Palin said she is gratified that the settlement recognizes that she broke no laws or ethics rules. Sebastian Schnula is the 2009 Yukon Quest champion. Schnula edged fellow veteran musher and Whitehorse resident Hugh Neff this morning in Fairbanks. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Sebastian Schnula left the final race checkpoint at Two Rivers just 35 minutes ahead of Hugh Neff early Tuesday. Spotters had Neff gaining on him along the final 45 miles of trail. So when a team was spotted coming down the Chena River toward town, it wasn't clear who it was until Quest announcer Julie Esty made the call.
Tell me it's Sebastian Schnula!
Schnula crossed the finish line at 10:44 a.m. to claim victory and the $30,000 first prize. He says it's his last Quest and that he plans to retire from racing after the 2010 Iditarod. Schnula was barely able to sign in, get a few bear hugs, and start congratulating his 10 dogs when fellow Whitehorse musher and Quest veteran Hugh Neff came roaring under the finish banner. Neff clawed back all but 4 minutes of the 35 he was down to Schnula at the final checkpoint, where mushers take a mandatory rest. Neff finished at 10:48 with 9 dogs. The dramatic finish closed out a tumultuous final 2 days of racing at the front of the pack that saw William Cleeden fade, Neff suffer a 2-hour time penalty for mushing off course, and Schnula surge ahead while the other top teams struggled over Eagle Summit. Schnula says he knew Neff was gaining on him through the final miles, but he tried to stay focused.
Hugh kept me on the edge of my seat. I mean, I could tell he was getting closer on the river. So every corner I looked around and see if he's there. I couldn't see him. I was like, okay, so far so good. I listened to AC/DC the whole way, so I had my earplugs in.
Schnula says he knows Neff has the fastest dog team. He says he'll take the win, but doesn't agree with the 2-hour penalty slapped on Neff for taking a road instead of the trail for 5 miles leading into Central.
In all honesty, I mean, I really think that Hugh actually won this race. He would have been 2 hours ahead of me if it wouldn't be for his time penalty. I mean, he clearly had the better team. So he knows that, and I know that, and you know, I think for us it's the most important thing. He already had me in Angel Creek with being an hour and a half ahead of me, you know, by time, if he wouldn't have gotten that stupid penalty.
Neff's second-place finish topped his best previous placing, a third in 2005. Neff says his dog team was amazing in its ability to maintain pace and handle long runs on short rest.
It was it was like living in a fantasy world for a week and a half. I feel like I've just come back to reality all of a sudden. So I've seen a lot in the last 10 days. Now I'm just thinking about a nice shower, a good sauna, and a cold beer.
Neff says the penalty has soured him on the Quest, and he likely won't run again unless things change in race management. Both Neff and Schnula will only have a short break this week before heading to Anchorage to run the Iditarod. Third place went to Quest veteran John Little of Kisilov. Little crossed the finish line in Fairbanks at 11:52 with 8 dogs. Little hung tough through the entire race, with a team cobbled together after the loss of 5 leaders in a fall training accident. All of the top 3 mushers broke the Yukon Quest speed record of 10 days, 2 hours, and 37 minutes. The old record was set by Lance Mackey in 2007. Mackey says he doesn't mind seeing it broken.
I'm not disappointed. It didn't pay any different to break the record. You know, all that is bragging rights.
The 4-time champion was noticeably absent from this year's Yukon Quest. Mackey was on hand at the finish line to congratulate the top 3 and says he'll be back to challenge for a 5th Quest victory next year. Reporting on the Yukon Quest Trail in Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Congress looks at reining in missile defense spending.
This bill is aimed at being much tighter in terms of the testing, prototyping, and flying before we buy.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. BP, where training Alaska's future workforce is a priority. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA, was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
Anchorage skier Keegan Randall claimed a silver medal today in the skate sprint at the Nordic World Championships in the Czech Republic. It was the best finish ever for an American cross-country skier in the history of the competition, APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Keegan Randall says she felt relaxed and strong at the start of the sprint final. Her goal was to grab the lead as early as possible and hang on. She spent much of the race in front, but in the final turn, Italian skier Arianna Fallas edged past her. Randall finished just 0.6 seconds behind, but she calls the silver medal a dream come true.
So it was just a great race, one of those kind of a Steve Prefontaine race. You know, I tried to lead it from the front and go for it and not take any chances, and it paid off.
Less than a year ago, Randall was wondering if she would even be able to keep skiing. She was hospitalized 3 times last spring with a potentially life-threatening blood clot. Randall missed 6 weeks of training and says she had to put in extra work last summer and fall to get her strength back.
I wrote down in my logbook at the beginning of the summer that one of my goals was to win a world championship medal. And it kind of took my breath away every time I looked at it, knowing that it was going to be a big challenge to tackle. But it is great to make it come true today.
This isn't Randall's only historic race. She became the first U.S. woman to win a cross-country World Cup event in 2007. U.S. ski team coach Chris Grover says he knew a podium finish in the sprint was possible for Randall during this week's World Championships, but he says a lot of things have to come together to pull off a great performance. And he says the sprint is a tough event.
There's usually a lot of contact. There's often broken equipment, broken skis, broken poles, people crashing. And so one of the keys to sprint racing successfully is to really avoid that conflict. So tactically, she really knew where to get out in front to avoid trouble and to put herself in a position to have this kind of success.
This week's World Championships could be a big boost for the sport of cross-country skiing in the U.S. Americans aren't typically known for their prowess in the sport, but besides Randall, 4 other members of the U.S. Nordic team have medaled at the event. Grover says the accomplishment is a decade in the making, and it will do a lot to help raise the profile of cross-country skiing.
I don't know if it'll ever be as big a sport as it, you know, in the U.S. as it is in Norway or Sweden or something like that. However, I will say that there's, you know, in recent years, there's been a lot more interest in endurance athletics in our culture, whether it's in running or the excitement that Lance Armstrong, for example, brought to road cycling. So I think that we can still raise the bar, and a performance like Keegan's today will absolutely help that.
The skate sprint is Randall's best event, but the sprint at the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver will be in the classic discipline. Randall says she's working closely with her coach, Eric Flora, at Alaska Pacific University to sharpen her classic skills. APU coach Holly Brooks says a silver medal at Worlds will be a huge confidence booster for Randall heading into next year's Olympics. And she says both coach and athlete are ready to put in a lot of hard work.
Eric and Keegan have some technical ideas of things that they really want to focus on, and you know, I'm sure that she'll wake up every morning thinking about about how she can make improvements and how she can become the best classic sprinter in the world.
Randall will have a chance to hone those classic skills Wednesday with the World Championships team sprint event. She's partnering with fellow APU skier Laura Vallis. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
The chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Democrat Carl Levin of Michigan, continues to voice concerns about the National Missile Defense System, part of which is based in Alaska. It has components at the Kodiak Launch Complex and at Fort Greeley in Delta Junction. Levin says he does support proven missile defense and says short-range missiles have been shown to work. But Levin says missiles like the ones based at Fort Greeley in Delta Junction are not yet proven technology.
In terms of the missile defense system against long-range missiles, they're, as far as I'm concerned, have not been adequately tested. We've moved too quickly based on a threat which I believe is deterrable. North Korea is deterrable by the certainty of its own destruction should they ever dare to attack us.
Levin also announced new legislation aimed at reducing cost overruns in defense spending. He's co-sponsoring his bill with Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona. McCain called the defense acquisition process a train wreck because of cost growth and delays.
It's ships, it's airplanes, it's the future combat systems for the Army. It is a broad array where the costs have gotten completely out of control.
The Defense Department's largest acquisition programs are an average of 2 years behind and are nearly $300 billion over budget. McCain and Levin do not support cutting funding from troops and instead say money can be saved by changing the way weapon systems are purchased and developed. McCain did not weigh in on missile defense, but Senator Levin said across the board, defense programs need to be held more accountable with testing, especially missile defense.
Right now, they've been given a pass. They're not subject to the usual rules of acquisition. They can buy before they fly, and that's wrong. We should not allow that. And this bill is aimed at being much tighter in terms of the testing, prototyping, and flying before we buy.
Levin wouldn't say whether he'll actually push for a reduction in missile defense spending. He said that will depend on the current budgeting process going on in Washington.
The administration may make some decisions on reductions in missile defense before it comes to me, to us here at the Hill. So until I see the budget, I can't say that I will favor reducing the budget request in missile defense. I do think that we've spent a lot of money in the area of missile defense without adequate testing.
Alaska's congressional delegation sent a joint letter to Defense Secretary Robert Gates earlier this month, stating their strong support for the missile defense system. They called for no reductions in spending or delays in implementation and said concerns about North Korea and Iran make missile defense necessary. The state's investment officers, including the Retirement Board and the Permanent Fund, are one step closer to getting rid of any holdings they have left in companies that do business with the Sudan. The House State Affairs Committee has unanimously approved a bill requiring divestiture as long as international and congressional sanctions are in place because of the genocide in the country's Darfur region. But first, members rejected an attempt to expand the investment ban. Anchorage Republican Craig Johnson proposed divestiture based on a company's policy on late-term abortion.
Partial birth abortion is something that has been ruled on. It is, you may not call it genocide, but to the dead person, it really doesn't matter. And this is asking our permanent fund to divest in any organization, medical facility anywhere in the world that partakes in something that I consider equally as tragic as the genocide in Darfur.
The amendment irritated Chairman Bob Lynn, a former president of Alaska Right to Life, who said he will gladly support a standalone bill opposing abortion. Lynn argued against the amendment, charging Johnson with pitting one good cause against another to the detriment of both.
You honestly probably believe that your amendment illustrates that if we divest to hinder one injustice, that other injustices also need to be addressed at the same time. And that brings to mind the proverbial slippery slope. But here's the difference, and you pointed out yourself. The situation in Darfur is a criminal situation that the United States Congress has declared to be genocide.
That amendment failed, along with another by Johnson that would have banned the state from purchasing the products of any company doing business in Darfur. The bill passed and will next be considered by the House Judiciary Committee.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the Alaska State Elks Wounded Veterans Project, raising public awareness to assist severely injured service members to help themselves and others. Information at alaskastateelks.org.
Alaskan attorney Heather Kendall Miller, who works with the Native American Rights Fund, is being considered for a position in the Obama White House. The position would be within the Domestic Policy Office and would have a title along the lines of Native American Policy Advisor. Kendall Miller is reluctant to talk about the job yet because it is not fully developed and she has had no firm offer. Kendall Miller is urging Alaska tribes and Native organizations to work quickly to apply for some of the $2 billion in direct funds and the $2.2 billion in bonding authority that is in the federal stimulus package for tribes. She says there is truly a sense of urgency to get the money out the door.
For tribes that have been suffering greatly in these past several years from this poor economy and lack of federal funds because of our overall expenses in supporting two wars and such, it's going to be a great welcome to see this kind of federal money coming in. But tribes have to be ready to put this money to work almost immediately.
Kendall Miller says beyond the money that is aimed directly toward Native organizations, there are opportunities for tribes to compete with states for other funds and bonding authority within the stimulus plan, which is a departure from past federal initiatives.
One of the changes, however, in this bill, though, is it takes away some of IRS's restrictive requirements that had been otherwise imposed on tribal bonding authority. And that is considered to be a very significant positive that has come out of this bill.
She says there is a lot of money for BIA programs, $40 million for operations of Indian programs, and $450 million for construction. $500 million is available for housing. There is funding for the Justice Department for victims of violence, as well as health care, water and sanitation programs through EPA funding. But although the quick turnaround required to apply for the funds will be streamlined, she says there will be stringent accountability requirements.
This is where the agencies are going to have to step up to be able to manage something like this. And, of course, they'll be putting pressure on the recipients of the grants as well to work with them in that capacity. But, you know, it's been important to this administration to be able to have transparency and accountability. And so it may seem a bit of a conflict, but that is the, the cost of being able to make these monies available to generate jobs and such.
Kendall Miller says the National Congress of American Indians has developed a matrix laying out what funding is available and includes information on how tribes can start the process of accessing it. There may be a cloud over the BIA portion of funding in Alaska, however. The Interior Department's Inspector General Earl Devaney sent a letter to Interior Secretary Ken Salazar cautioning that the Alaska region's inattention to expenditures and failure to manage the program has repeatedly jeopardized the success of Alaska Native Roads Program and caused millions of dollars to be wasted or unaccounted for. Calls to Devaney's office and the Alaska Region BIA office were not returned. The travel industry, both large cruise lines and smaller Alaska-owned businesses, are offering visitors cost-saving bargains. But according to a pair of travel industry speakers at yesterday's Anchorage Chamber of Commerce luncheon, the outlook for the tourist season is mixed. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
According to Ron Peck, president and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association, the average tourist to the state spends about $930. That's besides lodging and any cruise costs. Peck offered a bevy of tourism statistics. From October 2007 to September 2008, last year, according to the visitor industry, Alaska hosted about 2 million visitors. 1.7 million came during the summer. According to Peck, that figure fits a recent pattern.
2007 and 2008, we've been basically flat, right at about 1.7 million visitors. And I will project that it will be a challenge for us to get to that 1.7 number, 1,700,000 visitors, during 2009.
Peck says the state is caught in a nationwide travel trend. Alaska is a long-haul destination when economics are forcing many domestic and foreign vacationers to look closer to home. Peck cited U.S. Travel Association predictions for 2009.
They predict that they'll see overall in the United States a decline of domestic travel by about 3.5% and international travelers coming to the U.S. of about 3%.
Adding to Alaska's challenges is diminished capacity. Airlines have reduced service between the state and outside. While 10 new cruise ships are putting out to sea this season, none are coming to Alaska. A couple of cruise lines have reduced Alaska sailings. The good news, Peck says, is that website inquiries about visiting Alaska have increased. The frustrating element is that those inquiries are not translating into bookings as in past years, at least not as quickly. Bill Fletcher, director of Alaska Yukon Marketing and Sales for Holland America Line, told the Chamber audience Alaska and its unique wilderness experience still holds a strong appeal for people making travel plans.
So they're slapping at the bait, as it were, and our job is to set the hook and reel them in.
Fletcher also says this isn't an easy year to predict numbers for the upcoming season. Many prospective travelers are waiting for the deal of a lifetime for what they might consider the trip of a lifetime.
In a normal year, I'd be able to give you a pretty good snapshot of how things are looking. I'm pretty short on specifics because the booking window is getting so compressed. The fact that people are putting off their buying decisions and the fact that our season is fast approaching is meaning that people are finally getting off the couch and booking a lot of the deals that are unprecedented in the marketplace.
Fletcher says Holland America, like the other cruise lines, will likely fill their ships. Cut prices and special offers seem to be conquering some reluctance to book. This is Len Anderson.
Mushers and snow machiners took off Sunday on the commemorative serum run from Nenana to Nome. Legendary mountaineer and musher, the late Colonel Norman Vaughn, started the commemorative run in 1997 to honor the 1925 life-saving trip that mushers took to deliver medicine to diphtheria-stricken Nome. In 1925, mushers took the medicine from the train in Nenana and took off for Nome. It was the only way to get the serum there at the time. Colonel Vaughn made medical education a part of the commemorative run, and 22 years later, Dr. Brian Trimble with the Alaska Native Medical Center says physicians are still going along to help rural Alaskans better understand various health issues.
This year, the medical mission is going to be stroke and stroke awareness. But in the past, it's been head trauma and immunizations and fall risk and several other medical issues that use the serum run to heighten the awareness of.
Trimble says 8 mushers and a 13-member medical mission team on snow machines will visit 13 communities on the run to Nome.
Along the way, we'll be meeting with children in schools and community centers and whoever else is interested in hearing about stroke awareness and stroke prevention. We also are planning on doing some focus groups on getting ideas about perceptions and attitudes about stroke and chronic disease.
The Serum Run group expects to be on the trail for 19 days and should arrive in Nome around March 12th. Links are at our website, aprn.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Andy Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. It's never too early to set expectations and goals for your child's education. The UA College Savings Plan provides opportunities that can help you reach your educational savings goals. Save in Alaska, study anywhere. There's more information available by calling 1-888-4 and then Alaska. This message sponsored by the UA College Savings Plan.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.